We're going to be reading mostly from the Abhidharma. Abhidharma is the oldest, next to the Vinaya, you know, the oldest Buddhist literature that we will study in these courses. It is the very first of the four Buddhist schools, the Vaibhashika school. And that's a very great work called the Abhidharma Kosha. Ken Rinpoche taught it for 10 years in New Jersey. We went through the whole thing very carefully, and we translated it from the commentary by the first Dalai Lama. The first of any kind of Lama is always the greatest, well, I shouldn't say that, is always a great Lama, because that's the one that starts the lineage. The first Dalai Lama was an incredible teacher, an incredible Lama. He was a student of Tsongkhapa. And one of his most famous works is his commentary on the Abhidharma Kosha. Abhidharma Kosha is basically a very old book that's a collection of very older books that explain all of Buddhism in a nutshell. And it's very difficult. The book is very difficult. It goes, the first chapter covers the parts of a person and a person's mind. The second chapter goes on and discusses all the energies within yourself. The third chapter discusses the universe and time and space and where are other galaxies and how did the world start and where did beings come from and things like that. Fourth chapter is the best presentation on karma from anywhere. Fifth chapter is the best presentation on mental afflictions, all your bad thoughts. And then it goes on to chapters that help you to understand meditation and how to liberate yourself. That's the Abhidharma Kosha. In the monastery, we study it for normally 2 years. We're going to be covering the third chapter. The Kosha was written about 1600 years ago. You have the dates here, and it was written by Vasubandhu. So we'll start the class tonight. We'll cover two of the three realms. There are three, according to Buddhism, there are three realms in this world. The desire realm, the form realm, and the formless realm. And we'll be covering two of those tonight. It's sort of a short class because of all this introductory stuff. The second class will be about the formless realm, the five different kinds of rebirth, how you take rebirth, and how it's possible to know what rebirth you're going to take. Does anyone take rebirth purposely? Or just can anyone direct their rebirth? Class number three, we're going to cover what it's like to be two of the kinds of rebirths. You know, there's a thing called a craving spirit. Sometimes it's called yidak or preta or hungry ghost. You cannot see them. It's supposedly one way you can take birth. So we're going to discuss that kind of being. How do they live? And then animals. We're going to talk about the world of animals from a Buddhist perspective. Class number four, we're going to cover the... by the way, class number three will come from some of you older students know. It's a book called The Tenrin Chomo. It was written 800 years ago. It was lost. It was one of the most important books ever written in Tibet. And His Holiness found one copy in Siberia about 15 years ago. And then we found a copy, a clearer copy in India about 6 years ago. So it's very great. It's 1,000 pages long. It was the basis for the greatest book ever written in Tibet, which is Lama Chamo. And we're going to study from that. So no one has ever studied from that in the West, except for a brief class out in California, but last summer. But I think it's a great opportunity to study that book. The fourth class is about the lives of human beings, and then there's a certain kind of beings called pleasure beings. Sometimes they're called deities, sometimes they're called gods, sometimes they're called devas and paths. And we'll discuss what their world is like. That whole description will come from a book by the first Panchen Lama. And he lived in 1570s to 1600s. Very great scholar. Nowadays there's a big argument about the newest Panchen Lama, I think the 12th or something. And he was a great scholar. We're also going to study a commentary which has never been taught in the West by Munchu Dhammapada, who lived about 200 years ago. And he's a great master of our tantric lineage. So that'll be a very beautiful commentary. Class 5 is all about the intermediate state, which is popularly, it's called in Tibetan the Bardo. Okay. A lot of teachings about the bardo are from Tantra and cannot be discussed in public, or should not be discussed in public. And the Abhidharma is the classic source for all the teachings on the bardo. The Abhidharma explains the bardo thoroughly, tells you how they got there, what are they like, what's it going to be like, what do they look like. And then the Abhidharma, interestingly, tries to prove that they exist. It tries to prove that the bardo exists. And I thought you might like to hear those arguments. Okay? It tells you how a bardo finds a new birth. Okay? Which is interesting. Okay, next page. The Abhidharma gets into the kinds of food or the kinds of energy that are like food. Food is only one of the four ways of sustaining your body, the kind of food that we know. And there are other kinds of ways of sustaining the body, which are covered in the Abhidharma. I think they're very interesting. And then a general description of this world. What does this world look like according to the Abhidharma? And where did it come from? And how is it destroyed? Class 7 is going to cover the hells, the Buddhist concept of the hells. What are the hells like? What are those beings like? How do you get there? How do you get out? Class number 8 is a description of time and space itself. The Abhidharma describes time down to microseconds and up to trillions of light years. It's very beautiful, it's very interesting. And then the same with space. And then they go through the concept of an eon, or kalpa. And you know, you always hear kalpa, but you never know what it is. We're going to discuss all the kinds of kalpas. And what is a kalpa, how long does it last, like that. How the world is destroyed, how the world comes into being, and how often do Buddhas come in the world, and why, and when, and how many kalpas between, and things like that. Class 9 and 10 are taken from a different book. This is the Lamrim Chemo of Jetsun Kapa. He is the main Lama of our lineage. He lived about 500 years ago. And he described in great detail how to meditate on death. The reason for studying the realms is mainly to discuss the problem of suffering and where you're going to go after you die. And Jetsun Kapa has a beautiful death meditation in his Lamrim Chemo. We're going to go through the death meditation in great detail and try to get the details of how a person should meditate on death. Class number 11, as usual, will be a review of everything we've done. You're required in this course, I didn't mention it, to do homework. It's interesting. It's not like difficult homework, but I tried to make it just very relevant to what you need to know for your life, and what you need to know Buddhism well. And it was interesting because I had my final exams in November. A lot of you came. I had to debate a lot of monks for about 4 or 5 days. And that's the final exams after like 18 years or something. And people asked me, was it difficult? And I said, no, because they didn't ask me almost anything that wasn't in these courses. So this really is a good survey of Buddhism. I mean, if you were a monk in a Tibetan monastery and you studied for 20 years, these are the things you'd be expected to know at the end. And so I don't want to waste your time. The homework is something that just concentrates on the things that you need to know for your practice and the things that are considered important for all Tibetan monks, for example, to study, to know by the time they get done with their studies. So it really is a baby geshe course, okay? And then the final exam will be the next class after that. The final exam comes only from the quizzes. The quizzes are something that you get when you come to class. They're like 4 or 5 questions. They all come from the homework that you just finished the week before. And they're not difficult, but they're important. And I don't think I've ever had students fail, you know, in the sense of not being able to figure out the quiz. You know, people fail because they get tired or they get other interests or something like that. But it's not difficult in that sense. It's something that I want you to bring to class with you and keep in your mind for your own benefit, for your own life. So I won't ask you any stupid questions or useless questions. It's just things that you have to know. Part of the idea of this class is that you could pass on Buddhism to other people. You know, my teacher has passed Buddhism on to a small number of people, and it has to multiply in the sense of you know, each one of you has now some responsibility to pass this on to other people. If we keep doing that, then it will be spread to anyone who wants to know it very quickly. And so it's, you have a big responsibility to study well. There's not any... A chance like this is very rare. First of all, to be healthy enough to come to class, not too old, not too young, not too senile, not too stupid, you know, healthy, interested, and then someone willing to teach. It's very rare. And so take advantage of it. Don't waste your time. It's a very rare time in a person's life when you have the interest. And that can change. You can lose that. When you have the interest, when you have the good health to meditate, for example, when you're smart enough to figure out what the person's saying, it's a very small window of opportunity. It will pass quickly. This is the first class we ever held in this place. There will definitely be a last class. And we'll all be scattered again. And it will come. And so you have to take advantage of, you know, all the things coming together briefly. Take advantage of it, because then it's going to melt again. And we'll all be separated again. So try to use the time. It's a very precious time. All right. I write things on the board in Tibetan. Ask you to repeat in Tibetan. This is not the Tibetan track. You didn't walk into the wrong class. it just puts a seed in your mind for the future. And it helps you in the future. You'll be able to read the text better and things like that. So I'll write something on the board. I'll put the pronunciation in Tibetan. And then I'll ask you to repeat. And don't be shy. A language class, you're supposed to be a little bit loud and make noise. And don't be embarrassed. We'll take a break in about... What time is it? Okay. I'll just start briefly and we'll take a break in about 10 minutes. And then we'll come back in. Yeah. It won't be ready until next class. Okay.
So next Monday we don't have class. You get free for the next Monday we do. That's the 9th.
Alright. Next time. First I'll tell you the book we're going to study and who wrote it, okay?
Sure.
Chö means Dharma. The definition of Dharma is Rangin Mo Zime Na Chö. It means any object which has its own nature. And that's the meaning of Dharma. So it means any existing thing. Dharma means any existing thing. Sometimes it means Buddhist teachings. But more generally, it means any existing thing. Mumba means hide. And Zu means like a big treasure. I don't know what you call it, but in India, the kings had this special house.
Treasury.
Treasury, okay. Not like the American treasury, there's nothing there. But full of gold and jewels and a treasure house. In Sanskrit, which you don't, well, you do have to know. It's called Abhidharma Kosha. Abhidharma means higher knowledge, from the word high dharma. And Kosha means that treasure house. Okay, so Abhidharma Kosha is the original word, Sanskrit word, which in Tibetan was translated as Chumun Mutsu. So if somebody says, what are you studying? You say, Mumba. You just say Chumun. You can say Abhidharma, it's easier. Okay. I often tell this embarrassing story when I met the Dalai Lama's tutor in a train station in India and he asked me what I was studying and I didn't know the word for it. So you shouldn't be like that, okay? Abhidharma. You're studying the Abhidharma. The Abhidharma Kosha is the most often used book to study Abhidharma. There are many books of Abhidharma and the Abhidharma Kosha is the most famous one. It was written by... It was written by Vasubandhu. We're not allowed to call in Buddhism a lama by just his name, you're supposed to put something in front of it, honorific. So you can say master for Acharya. Okay, so I hope nobody in this class puts on their homework Vasubandhu. That's like saying, hey Clinton, you know.
Bad example.
Yeah, right. Anyway, just put master or put Acharya or something like that. Okay? Should do that. In Tibetan, it's Yigmyen. Say Yigmyen.
Yigmyen.
Nobody will ever remember that. You can say Vasubandhu. Okay.
What is the honorific title you'd like to be referred by?
Dr. Sykes said Big Roach would be good.
No, that's the doctor.
Is that Roach Law? Master Vasubandhu lived about 350 AD. I mean, early Indian history, nobody knows anything. It's a guess. His half-brother was who? Asanga, okay? Master Asanga. Between them, these two half-brothers wrote about half of the monastic curriculum. Okay? Half of the books you ever study in Buddhism are written by one of these two people. It was a great, two great brothers. And the story of how they were born and everything is very beautiful, and I won't go into it because we don't have time. Gendun?
Gendun.
Drup. By the way, if you're new, don't worry. You don't have to know how to spell in Tibetan on the homework, but you will have to spell this, okay? In the English letters, okay? Say Gyalwa.
Gyalwa.
Gendun.
Gendun.
Drup.
Drup.
Gyalwa is the Tibetan word for a Dalai Lama. It means the victorious one. And Tibetans don't call the Dalai Lama the Dalai Lama. They call them Gyalwa or Gundun. Gyalwa Rinpoche, something like that. So Gyalwa means Dalai Lama. Gendun Drup is the name of the first Dalai Lama. That was the name of the first Dalai Lama. His dates, which you should know, are 1391 to 1474. And he was a student of? Jetsonkhapa. He was a student of Jetsonkhapa. He's actually not one of the two more famous students, but he was a student. He was pretty, he was about 35, 30, 40 years younger than Jetsonkhapa. So he didn't study with him as extensively as the other two great students of Jetsonkhapa. Say Tarlam.
Tarlam.
Selje.
Selje.
Tarlam.
Tarlam.
Selje.
Selje.
This is the book that the first Dalai Lama wrote to explain what? The Abhidhamma Kosha. Okay? The Abhidhamma Kosha. And in English, tar is tarpa. I think you know what that means. Tarpa. In Sanskrit, it's moksha. Freedom. Lam you know from Lam Rim, I think.
Path.
Selje means that which makes clear, and it's a word for a lamp, okay? The illuminator, illumination. What's the biggest selje in the world? The sun, okay? So that's a selje, I mean a source of light, okay? It lights up a path. You read Tibetan backwards normally, so the book that the first Dalai Lama wrote to explain the Abhidhamma Kosha is Illumination of the Path to Freedom. Okay? Illumination of the Path to Freedom. Sheds light on the path to freedom. Shows you the way like a lantern. Shows you the path. Like a good flashlight. Okay. There are actually two famous Tarlam Seljes. Because Gyaltsab Jay, another student of Jetsonkhapa, wrote a Tarlam Selje to explain Buddhist logic. So if you're going to get fancy, you would say Zotik Tarlam Selje. And that would, you'd say the Tarlam Selje, if you want to show off, okay, we're studying the Tarlam Selje, which explains the Abhidhamma. Because there are two famous Tarlam Seljes. Those are the books we're going to study. Those are the main texts we're going to be reading from. And we'll start the first of the two realms after you take a break. You're welcome to go downstairs. There's a little lounge there. And there's some hot water there, and you can make some tea or something. And we'll come back in about 10 minutes. Okay? The first one. It's called Durkham. Say Durkham.
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 Dur means desire. Dur means desire. Kham means realm. Kham means realm. It happens to be the same word for Kham out in East Tibet, because that's one area. And Kham can also mean one specified area or piece of anything. Kham. So Durkham means the desire realm. That's the realm we live in. We'll talk more about it. I don't know if you can see this. We'll have a better board next week. Sorry.
Okay. I can't read on the bed.
You can cheat off and rent out. Now say sukham.
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 Suk means, suk is a hard word to translate. People translate it as form. Here it means physical matter, okay? Physical stuff. Suk. Sukham is the realm of form, the form realm. Okay? I don't know what you think of when I say form. I'm not quite satisfied with the word, because form in English means I saw his form to the window, you know, like the outline of something, or a form that you fill out or something. But it really, in Buddhism, it refers, in this case, to physical matter, to objects of the senses. Okay? And then the third realm, realm number three, says sumekam.
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 Again, sub means form. Me means what?
None.
Not or none, so it's formless. Sub-me means formless. Kam means realm. The beings in the formless realm don't have any physical body. They're just mental. They're just mental beings. You can't see them. And we'll talk about it next class, but actually there's no place for that realm. It's wherever their thinking is the place, okay? So that realm has no physical matter. The beings there are mental beings. And they don't have physical bodies. The Sukham is called the Sukham because physical matter there reaches its highest expression. All the beings in the Sukham basically are what we call Paas or Devas. They are beings who are living in some kind of temporary paradises. I think maybe it's very similar to what you think of in Christianity when they say heaven. But what you think of in Christianity when they say heaven, like some place where, like, what's that island they used to go to on the Love Boat or something? You know, you think of something like that. And it's kind of like that. Their realm is like that. They live for millions of years. It's a very pleasant place. They just enjoy themselves. All of those beings are in the Sukham are devas. They are, I call them pleasure beings. So as not to confuse them with tantric deities, which are enlightened beings, and they're different. They're not living in the Sukham. Sukham's a bad place to be, because while you're there, you burn up tremendous amounts of good karma, and you don't make any new good karma. And so if you do a flow chart, like Tom Carley could do a flow chart, but anyone who reaches the Sukham basically always falls down to the hells after that, because it takes a tremendous amount of good energy to keep you there. You're burning it up, you know, thousands and thousands of deeds every day. And then you must fall after that, because you're not doing any new good deeds. So it's most common for people to go from the Sukham down to the lower realms. So Sukham is sort of a place like that. It's not in this physical world. It's above this physical world. It's above the highest mountain of this world, according to Abhidhamma, and we'll get into that. It has 17 different levels. Okay? It goes like this. There are four different levels in the former. You can read about it in the reading. Okay? But as you know, there are four samtens. Samten is a meditation level. There are four meditation levels, four deep meditation levels that you can reach when you meditate. If you meditate in this life, you can reach four different levels of meditation called samtens. Okay? If you meditate on the first samten, if you get good at that, it's very hard to get there. Okay? It takes very, very few people in this room maybe will ever reach the first samten. It's very hard to get there. It requires being beyond your senses completely. In meditation, you're not hearing anything, tasting anything, smelling anything. You're beyond the objects of the senses. You've reached such a deep state of meditation that you're totally beyond the objects of the senses. That's called the first samten. And if you can reach that, and you just stay there all the time, and you collect a lot of the karma of being there, that kind of meditation will cause you to be born in the first section of the former. You'll be born as a very beautiful, like, pleasure being. You'll be born it'll be a very pleasant place. You'll live millions of years there. You'll just enjoy yourself. And then the last day of life there, they get some premonition of what's going to happen to them. And they say that the suffering of that last day is worse than all the millions of years before, because they see where they're going. And everyone starts to avoid them. For the first time, they start to stink. Or for the first time, they start to look old.
And then all the other pleasure beings start to avoid them, and they know what's going on, they're about to die, and they see where they're going to go. So if you get hung up in that blissful meditation in this life, with no other purpose, it's like taking heroin or something, you get into staying in that kind of meditation and not using it for something higher, just staying there and enjoying it and being there. In Buddhism, it's considered a big trap. It's considered a big mistake. If you get good at that meditation and spend a lot of time in that meditation, you avoid a lot of bad deeds. Why?
You don't do anything.
You just can't do them when you're in meditation. Okay, you can't lie, steal, kill, commit sexual misconduct. You can't do it while you're in meditation. So automatically you avoid collecting a lot of bad deeds. It leads you to this kind of a birth. But it's not desirable because you don't get anything done. This whole three realms are suffering. And the reason they come in the Abhidharma here is that they're explaining the truth of suffering. Everything in these three realms is suffering. Every being and every object in those three realms is suffering. So they don't even distinguish between the people and the place where they're staying. This room is suffering. I'm suffering. The blackboard is a kind of suffering. And all of us are suffering. And all three realms are like that. All three of these realms are like that. So the form realm, yeah.
When you say three realms, are you talking about desire, form, and form?
Yeah.
What is that? What this is, desire, form, and form?
These are called four levels of the form realm.
Yeah, and I don't understand it. 3, 3, 8?
I'm going to talk about it. Okay. It has a total of 17 sub realms like that. You see?
Yeah.
And which one you go to depends on how deep your meditation was. If you got into second level meditation, second samten, in this life, and then died, if you stayed in that level of meditation for a long time, and then died, you could be born into the second one here, the second part of the form realm. So the form realm has 17 different sections. Different things are going on in each section, you can read about it. But the way you get there is by being in deep meditation in this life, which is called causal form realm. And then you go to the resulting form. Why do I have these numbers here? These are three subsections of meditation. You know, deep, very deep, and extremely deep. Deep, very deep, and extremely deep. Deep, very deep, and extremely deep. Different kinds of meditation. So where you end up in the form realm depends on what kind of meditation you did before you died. As a practice, your whole life, you dedicated yourself to staying in this blissful state without doing anything else, without understanding emptiness or anything. Just letting your mind, emptying your mind, thinking about nothing. It was the viewpoint that was called Qianmen. It was very popular in some parts of Asia, and it was considered a big mistake because it doesn't lead to nirvana. You cannot get out of the three realms by doing this. All you do is get into different levels of the form realm. And you can read more about it in the reading. So there are 17 levels of the form realm. Where you end up there, how you end up there, depends on how deep your meditation was. And what kind of meditation you were doing in this life. Those are physical places that you can be born in. And the beings there, for example, in the first part of the form realm, there's a being called Brahma, and you can be born as one of his students, and they just sit all day reading the Vedas in front of Brahma. They study the Vedas, they read the Vedas, they live very blissful lives. Brahma is there as the main figure, and they are reciting the Vedas, the ancient holy books of Indian religion, Hinduism. And you can be born there. You don't commit any bad deeds there. It's a very smooth life, blissful life, and then finally you die and you go to a lower realm. Okay. So that's the form realm. And the main, what characterizes the form realm is that the form there is much more beautiful, and also people who live in the form realm have a tendency which comes from their past life where they're not overly attracted to the objects of the senses. They are beyond desire. Desire as we know it, they don't have. They don't care about the kinds of desire that we care about. We'll talk more about the kinds of desire we like. Can you see this realm? No. Can you go there? Yes. Can you get your mind into the kind of meditation that would cause you to be there? Yes. Is it always a bad thing to meditate like that? No, because if you use it for the right thing, you can perceive emptiness, for example. If you actually, in this life, learn to put your mind into the four-realm meditation, on that platform, and only on that platform, you can see deep spiritual things. So the idea is to get there and then do something with it. And you can learn that in this life. You can do that in this life. Then you can see the form realm, and you can use that meditation to see deep spiritual things like emptiness. In fact, you have to. You can't see it in a desire realm frame of mind. Okay, now, what's a desire realm frame of mind? There are six kinds of beings in the desire realm. Okay? In the form realm, there are only what? Only these pleasure beings. Okay, no animals, no humans, only these higher life forms. Okay, very blissed out people. We eventually die and go to hell. But in the desire realm, we have a bigger selection of beings. Okay? Sometimes five, sometimes they say six. I'll give you the basic kinds. Okay, the first kind is hell beings. And here I'll say one thing that I want to say. I mean, it's the most important thing to say in this class tonight. And we don't have much time, so I'm not going to go in much more detail tonight. But the thing to know is, why teach a class like this? I mean, I haven't heard of a class like this being taught in America yet. I haven't heard where somebody got up and took the third chapter of the Abhidhamma, which goes through all these different realms that you can't see, you can't prove. Some of them sound ridiculous. Some of them sound like what you learned in Christianity that you didn't like and you rejected. You know. So why would somebody get up and try to teach these realms? You know, what's the point? The point is, if you've been in these classes for the last year or two, you studied the Diamond Cutter Sutra, for example. You studied emptiness. And you studied the role of projection in the perception of reality. In other words, according to the higher schools of Buddhism, your own projections have a lot to do with your reality. In other words, this room is empty in the sense that it doesn't have any nature of its own. We all experience it in a different way. There isn't any way that it really is. It's just how we are experiencing it. And there is nothing there that, oh, you're seeing it good, I'm seeing it bad. There's just the one that you see good and the one that you see bad. There isn't something that's neither good nor bad that you're seeing. There's nothing there. You are seeing something good, I might be seeing something bad. There's nothing there which is good or bad by itself. No.
So is the point, the definition of emptiness that nothing has an inherent existence on its own?
Yeah, in the nature of its own.
I'm confused about the definition of dharma, which was the word choosing.
Any object that has its own nature,
right. Any existing thing. But according to emptiness, nothing really exists on its own.
Yeah, it's a very good question. Redefine dharma as having its own nature, which you perceive. As you perceive. It's a good question. So, maybe I'm experiencing you. Maybe I've done very good things in my past. And because of that, I really do see you all as a room of angels. It's possible. And maybe somebody who's done good things and bad things sees all these people in this room. They like some of the people. They don't like some of the other people. And then maybe somebody who's been really bad in the last few years sees everybody in this room as a drag. They see something. Everybody in the room strikes them as a little bit negative. That's the nature of this. That's the emptiness of the people in this room. Depending on my own past deeds, I will experience the people in this room a certain way. Okay. And what is the implication of that? What it means is, that means it's possible for there to be a thing called paradise and nirvana. Okay. You could, if you collected enough good energy. And we'll study that, how to do that. You could experience an object as total paradise. And then if you just kind of go on the way we're doing now, which is half good and half bad, the world will continue to seem like New York City. And if you happen to collect some very, very negative things, if you hurt people in a very bad way, then it's not out of the question to say that you could see something very terrible like you're get in a car accident and your body covered with fire, or something like that. It's, you know, it's possible. It happens to people. People do get in car accidents covered with gasoline and burning, and they're aware of that as they're burning. You know it's possible. So they have some kind of energy that, to see this happening to them. After the threshold called death, those perceptions become even more exaggerated. In other words, if you had a perception to see yourself get burned on the finger, then after death, the nature of that energy is that it multiplies after death. So it's possible that something that in this realm would only be burning your finger with a cigarette, the moment after this breathing stops, you could see it as your body covered with fire. It's not out of the question. It's totally possible if you understand emptiness. You have to study emptiness. But what I'm trying to say is that once you understand emptiness and you're an educated Buddhist, you don't have to go around apologizing for the third chapter of the Abhidhamma. Okay? You don't have to go around apologizing for the fact that the Buddha described the hell. It's totally possible. I don't say that you can see it right now, but for example, on the day that you first perceive emptiness, you will see the other realms. And you will know with certainty that you are in a realm called the desire realm, and that this realm is all suffering, and that it's a very bad place to be. For the first time, you will see there really are three realms, and that you really are in a thing called the desire realm, and that there really is nothing nice in this realm. You will see that someday. And I don't know, I don't believe that before that you can truly understand that. There is a thing called the desire realm, and you are there. And if you had been a different person in the past, you wouldn't have to be here. And if you're here, it proves something about you. And I'm talking about me too. And these are all things you understand on the day you see emptiness. You see the three realms. They really do exist. I can prove it to you with logic, if we take some time, that because things are empty, it's possible that there's a thing called a hot hell. But on that day, you'll see it. And you'll know there's a desire realm. And you'll know that there are desires. So it's important. The point is to not go to them, okay? And if you just think it's an old Christian superstition or something like that, it's a big mistake. Or as some Buddhist teachers have tried to say, oh, these are just psychological states that you go through in this life. No, it's not. There are places like that. And you have to learn about them. So emptiness proves that the realms I'm about to describe inside the desire realm are possible. And you have to consider it and act on it. Okay, we better go fast, but we won't get help these. Craving spirits, sometimes called pretas, sometimes called hungry ghosts. I don't like the word hungry ghosts, it just sounds like Casper to me, you know. People don't take it seriously. These are spirits who, mainly because they have been so ungenerous and selfish in their life, that they are born into some state where they can never be satisfied. They're constantly craving things. And you cannot see them. We cannot see the hell beings. They exist with certainty because you can't see them. It's in the logic books that you debate about the existence of craving spirits. They can be in this room. We cannot see them. They really are like spirits, haunted. How they do exist here, you can't see them. And Buddhism says, don't lie and say you can, because you can't. Unless you're some extraordinary person. You cannot confirm this right now. Okay? Put it on that category of things you're going to confirm later. Animals you can see. Okay? Animals you can see. The Buddhism says that the majority of animals, the great mass of animals, live in the oceans. And that the ones on dry land are, by population statistics, are very few, like dogs and cats, and compared to the animals living in the ocean, almost nothing. Mass of animals live in the ocean, and they live a life of total paranoia and fear, because your whole world, your whole gestalt as an animal is worrying about the one that's a little bigger than you, who's behind you ready to eat you. And, you know, humans think animals are silly for being so afraid, but it's wise to be afraid if you're an animal, because there's always someone a little bigger than you who's looking to eat you. You are food for someone, and they are there waiting for you, and you have to spend your life in fear. You have to spend your life watching all the time. And that's the life of an animal. Number four, humans. And according to Buddhism, humans living on four great continents in a huge ocean. And we'll talk about that. Okay? We're supposedly on the southern continent. And number five, pleasure beings. Okay? Pleasure beings. Usually they're called gods or deities or devas. And then demigods. Demigods are like pleasure beings who didn't have the karma to be quite as beautiful and strong and intelligent as a whole pleasure being. So they spend their whole existence being what?
Jealous.
Jealous, okay. Yeah.
But the ones in the formless form are pleasure beings.
Yeah.
Same thing?
Yeah, there are six... Good question, okay. There are six different kinds of pleasure beings in the desire realm. And then there are 17 different kinds of pleasure beings in the form realm. So pleasure beings exist in our realm, and they also exist in the form realm. But animals and the other four here, they don't exist in the form realm. They only exist in the desire realm, where we are. Okay? So there's kinds of pleasure beings who exist in this realm. We cannot see them. They do exist in this realm. And then there are higher kinds of pleasure beings who live in the form realm. So the only kind of being that is shared by those two realms is a pleasure being. With one other exception, can you guess?
Humans when they go to the higher realm.
Well, that's it. We can visit. Bardo beings. Okay. Bardo beings are outside of this breakdown. They're not counted anywhere. And where you're going determines what kind of Bardo being you are. So if you die and you're headed for the form realm, we call you a form realm Bardo being. But you're not in the form realm yet, and you're not in the desire realm anymore. I shouldn't say that. Anyway, you're headed for the form realm, but you're not counted as one of these five beings. A Bardo being is out of the loop. Yeah?
Would it be true that a human being in a state of deep meditation would also be in the form realm?
His or her mind would be in the form realm. The
and
body would be
separation?
In the desire realm. You still count them as desire realm. There's a big debate about that. Abhidharma loves to debate these things. It's a little bit, well... Anyway, those are the five types. I want to see if normally it's taught as one.
So, the sixth you're saying is that Bardo being?
Yeah, but they don't count it as number six. They just say there is a thing called Bardo. It's not included in the five, but it's there. Okay. Now, sometimes they divide them into 20. It's on your homework, okay? This is how I keep people interested at the end. How they get... It's 10 and 10. 10 bad births and 10 good ones. The way they get 10 is that they break the hell beings out into 8 different kinds of hot hell beings. Okay? So there are 8 different hot hells, and we will study them. Okay? There are 8 different kinds of hells where the basic suffering is just burning. 8 different types of hot hells. There's also 8 different what?
Cold
hells. They are... attached to the hot hells, so they don't count them separately. There are also things called partial hells, which can exist even on this, in this realm, like in the middle of the Gobi Desert. If you have a plane crash in the middle of the Gobi Desert or something, there are very wimpy hells. They don't really count, so they only count them as 8. So if you get 8 hells, craving spirits and animals, you get 10 bad kinds of birth. Humans you can divide into 4, which is what?
They don't see that.
4 different realms. Okay. I'm just 4 different continents. We happen to be on the southern continent. We'll talk more about the continents. Okay. You don't have to worry about falling off the edge of the earth tonight. And we'll get into that. 4 different kinds of humans. And then there are 6 different kinds of pleasure beings in this realm. Okay. And I'm not going to go through it, but basically those 6 kinds of pleasure beings, it's different kinds of pleasure. Some of them have the ability mentally to create objects which they can enjoy the use of. They can think up an object and then enjoy it. And then there's a higher level where you can enjoy the things that other people have thought of. And those are different levels of the desire. There are kinds of pleasure beings who struggle with lesser pleasure beings. They fight, they have wars. And there are kinds of pleasure beings who are beyond that. And so there are 6 different kinds. That way you get 10 and 10. And so the classic Abhidharma presentation is 20 different ways of being born. 8 hot hells, One craving spirit, one animals, that's 10. Four kinds of humans in different continents. Why don't they count the minor continents? When you do a mandala offering, you do four continents and then you do two minor continents that are attached to each major continent. They say, those don't really count. They're just attached to the major continent. So that's 4. And then pleasure being 6 different kinds. You can read it in the reading. But that adds up to 20, basically 20 different places you can stay in the desire realm. The Homer says, why is it called the desire realm? Okay, do you remember? I think I told you before. First Dalai Lama defined it. The basic motivations in this realm are food and sex. Okay? We desire food, and we don't even desire the higher kinds of food. There are kinds of food that don't look like the food we eat. There's like meditation kind of food. But people in our realm, our lives are focused around food, digestible food, which is the worst kind, the heaviest kind, and then sex. Those are our two main interests of people in this realm. So that's why it's called the desire realm. The characteristic of this realm is that we can have bad thoughts which are bad deeds. We can have bad thoughts which are also bad deeds. In the former realm, we don't have those necessarily. But in this realm, our bad thoughts are bad deeds. That's the characteristic of this realm. We can have desire, a kind of desire which people in the former realm don't have. When your mind is in the former realm in this life, which is called causal form realm, okay? You can't have desire because if you did, you could never get your mind up to that. If you're still thinking about a hot dog or something to eat or sex or something like that, you can't even put your mind in that realm. You can't do it. That's from the point of view of the cause. From the point of view of the result, meaning being born in that place in your next life, you naturally don't have those kinds of desire because you practiced so hard in your past life. So the characteristic of desire realm is that we do have that kind of desire. And when we focus on an object, our desire tends to get greater. They don't have that problem with the form realm. So that's the quality of the desire realm. Last question on the homework I didn't do, and then we'll stop. The highest realm of those 17 in the form realm is called Ogmin. Did you ever hear of Ogmin? Ogmin means below nothing. Og means below, and min means nothing. And it means it's the highest realm of its kind. It happens to be the highest realm in the form realm. And oftentimes it says in the scriptures that when you or I become a Buddha, we will do that in a paradise called Ogmin. When you or I reach final Buddhahood, and we gain the body of an angel, made of light, it'll be in a place called Ogmin. Okay. Excuse me?
But isn't Ogmin a generic term?
We're going to talk about it. There's a big debate about whether or not my Ogmin is going to be the same as your Ogmin. Okay. Or whether there's one big Ogmin and we all get our Buddhahood in this same Ogmin.
Could you spell that name, please?
Yeah, it's O-K-M-I-N. Ogmin. But that's not the point I want to make tonight. The point is, the highest level of the form realm is called Ogmin. Is that samsara or not? Is that suffering or not? Is that a place for being suffer or not?
Yep.
Yes.
So why do people get enlightened? Why is that the ultimate paradise where all people gain their final enlightenment?
You can't step over people.
Perhaps that's a place where nothingness can be best understood.
That's a good guess. Actually, there's two openings, okay? I'll give you a clue, okay? The homework is a trick question, all right? There's two openings, so you should know. I mean, you'll get confused. There's an opening which you get from meditating very deep in this life, and you reach the form realm, and it's some kind of beautiful paradise temporary. And then there's the opening that you get to, which is a Buddhist paradise. And it will be your personal opening. And you will be enlightened there. You will gain the body of an angel there, and you will send a body down to different planets to teach people and things like that. That's called the emanation body. That body always starts out in where? Vajrasana. Vajrasana, which is the seat of the diamond. It's called the seat of the diamond. The place where the emanation body always shows up is in India, in a place called Diamond. Seat of the Diamond. Nowadays called Bodh Gaya. So that's the, that's where the, your emanation body will show up. But the body which you're actually enjoying the use of and where you actually live will be in opening. And that will look like one of these, you know, deities, like Tara, something like that. But much nicer. Okay, now, any questions about? The last question in the homework says, what is the highest school of Buddhism? You know, what ultimately causes each of the different realms and types of joy? And you know what it is. It's really your own projections. Okay? It's really your own projections. If you had been good enough in the earlier part of your life, you could be seeing this room in a much different way than you are now. Assuming that you're seeing it the way I'm seeing it. Okay, and I don't know. Okay? But it's very possible that if you had been very good in your life before, you would be experiencing this room in a very, very interesting way that no one else is experiencing. And that's completely possible. According to the higher schools of Buddhism, this room is your own projection. The reality of this room comes from your own projection. And the older students, you know, where do the projections come from? Can you change them at will? Can you decide that tonight, I would like to see everybody in this room as an angel? You can't. I mean, once you do a good deed or a bad deed, you're locked in. And you're gonna experience life that way, whether you like it or not, whether you want to or not. It's true that this room is empty. But if you've been bad, there's no force in the universe which is gonna make this room pleasant for you. You will be forced to see it in it. You'll be forced to project a lousy room. Okay? And if you've been very good, you'll be forced to project it in a very interesting way, beautiful way. So that's how the highest teachings of Buddhism on emptiness relate to these weird realms, you know, like the hell realm and a big mountain somewhere and these four continents somewhere and this big ocean somewhere. And they, because things are empty, those realms can exist and you can be forced to go there. So you better find out about them. All right, we'll stop there. I'm going to ask anyone who has been an older student here, anyone who has gone through an entire course here and finished a course here and gotten a certificate here, I'd like you to stay because we have to talk about some projects. And then I'd like the other people to leave. Okay, so we'll do a short prayer. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that if anybody is new here and planning to come coming back and doing this course, and they have not met with Geshe Lhabu, would you please just give me your name and your phone number and we'll arrange you to meet with them.
So we're going to do a short prayer. It's in your notebook. First we'll do the mandala. It says mandala, I think. It's in the very beginning, first page. And then we'll do the noa, which is about the, what page is it, fourth page? So first we'll do the first page. And then we'll do the fourth page. The mandala is a thank you to the teachers of this lineage who brought you this teaching. And then the noa is dedicating it that you can keep this understanding with you as you walk out the door and go through your next few days. Okay? And we'll meet again on Monday at 7.
여러분 친구들